Hey, this is Thayer Serrano. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, our shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, 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 and welcome on back to Verbal Shenanigans, episode 237, I believe. 237. Crawling our way, Mike, to 250, where we have a huge surprise guest for everybody.
I'm going to say Jesus.
Well, it could be. It could be.
That would definitely surprise people. You got to be honest, Scotty.
Well, yeah. I mean, we had Vermin Supreme on, so that's close enough.
Yeah.
But anyway, everybody, welcome on back. We apologize for the 2-hour marathon that we we put out last week. We got a little long in the tooth there.
Yeah, sometimes you get exciting guests and you just got to bundle them, Scotty.
Yeah. That's what happens. Sometimes we get bundled up. Like, we're going to be bundled up for the next couple weeks, I believe. But you know, it happens. It's free content. Turn it off if you don't like it. What do you want from us? What do you want from us?
No, don't listen. Don't listen.
But everybody, welcome on back. This is Verbal Shenanigans. We are a kind of like a radio style type show. We talk about life and we talk about Berlew's addiction to leather puppy outfits. And we talk about we talk to interesting guests every week, and we've had many an interesting guest, and this year has been no different. So last week who did we interview last week?
We interviewed the Kentucky Reptile Zoo about snake milking, and we also talked to Scott Wilton, the vice president of the Unicycle Foundation.
Yes.
He's a professional unicycler, racer, / outdoor unicycler.
And the Kentucky Reptile Zoo, that might not sound that exciting, but you got to go back and listen to this guy. This guy, like, lost fingers. He had to fight his way to pay for his schooling. Like, I don't even remember what else he had.
He got stuck at Panama because he didn't know roads stopped there, and he had to find a boat to get over.
Yeah. There was a lot of little stories in there, and the guy basically has half his body parts, his original body parts anyway. But that turned out to be a fun one. And then the week before that, we had Vermin Supreme, who is a character himself. Just look him up. And the week before that, we had John Walsh and his son Callahan. From America's Most Wanted. So, been a lot of good ones lately. And we have a good catalog of stuff.
No doubt.
So again, if you're tuning in just now, and you like what you hear today, go check us out on all the podcast platforms. But you could also check us out on comingrightup.org Wednesdays at noon, and we're also recently been added to the Discovery County
network.
If you're out on the West Coast and you also want to check out some other cool content, so that's that. I smell really bad right now.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a nice update.
I had taken the day off, and I went to the gym, but then I was cooking, and I don't know, man. Definitely got some odor coming in as I talk.
So what's the more poignant smell? The cooking, the workout sweats, something in particular that you're not telling us?
The workouts, for sure. Also, a little secret here, like I took the day off and knew I didn't have to go somewhere, and sometimes when I know I don't have to go somewhere, I don't put on deodorant.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, generally, if it's like a Sunday and I know there's no place to go, I generally don't shower till the afternoon, close to, if at all. So,
see, I'm like a shower weirdo. I got a shower in the morning, first thing, got to do it. Even on Sunday or something, I'll get up and shower and then kind of, you know, lay around like a slob. And then a lot of times I'll shower after I get back from work or whatnot. But today I had taken the day off, and I just, you know, I'm just a little smelly at this point. But I got the one of the reasons I didn't shower is I got a little fixated on my new toy. That sounds gross.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I didn't know this podcast was going in this direction, Scotty boy.
Oh, just so you know, guys, we're pretty clean podcast. We don't usually get too nasty here. We let the guests want to get nasty, they can do that. But me and Berlo, we're upstanding citizens.
And once in a while, we have a guest that gets a little too nasty, and that's in the vault.
Yeah,
a little interview with the. The
Killer LGBT. Unicorns?
Yeah.
Something like that. So Alex's shower was a week and a half ago or something like that, and we got an Instapot. Are you familiar with these things?
Is that like a crock pot?
It's like a crock pot on crack. Like, it can do... It's a pressure cooker. It could do what the crock pot does, but it also is a pressure cooker, so it seals it. And, you know, it cooks things extremely fast. So, for instance, I did like 2 pounds of chicken thighs today in 12 minutes.
I'll take your word for it. If people show up dead next week with salmonella, I'll realize you hit the wrong button.
Fall off the bone, delicious cooked chicken thighs. And it took me a while to set up, and I was kind of reading about it, and I kind of got lost in it. But now all I want to do is Instapot everything. Like, I Instapot, I did vegetables tonight, everything done. I just threw in potatoes and onions and carrots, and everything was done in 8 minutes.
Dude, like, babe, this minute rice, 12 seconds. It's amazing.
We're cutting out time. But this thing's amazing. You could saute in it. You could make yogurt in it. You could make soups in it. You could do a crock pot style. You could simmer things. You could warm things up. It's like a crock pot with many different options.
I'd like this infomercial we're having this week. You know?
Right. Well, you know,
Scotty, I don't know about this. I mean, can you cook steak in it?
Well, you know, like, when I think about things that would really attract new listeners, me talking about my Instapot was the thing that really came to my head.
Yeah, sorry everyone, this is our infomercial for the week.
we now do a guest, an infomercial, anything to promote, and then we're out of here.
Yeah. Scotty, how sharp are those knives that you use? Can they cut through a can?
This will blast right through this shoe.
Did I ever tell you I almost got a job selling knives?
Jesus Christ. you're not going to elaborate?
Well didn't take it. It was like,
you can't throw that line in the water and not have us bite.
Yeah, I was like probably about... I think I just graduated. I was looking for some, like, summer work before I started off to college, and I was looking through stuff, and I think they listed just, like, as an administrative assistant. I'm like, oh, that seems simple enough and can kind of do, like, computer work and stuff like that, and I show up, and I actually recognize somebody from my high school there, so I'm like, oh, this is cool, and it was like 25-odd people. I'm like, man, this company needs a lot of people. And then we're just sitting down, and then it, like 5 minutes in, it's like, ah, damn. And they're playing the whole thing where they're showing the product, and they're like, these scissors are amazing. They took out a penny, and they're like cutting it from the edge, so it's like nothing but a spiral curl left and whatever. And you could tell that, like, people were planted there, because they were getting, like, too damn psyched about this. Oh, wow! That's amazing! Like, literally, like, if you could just script something, and, like, somebody says, write this script in 5 seconds, that's what they were saying out loud. Like, no normal person will be, like, this amazed by this product.
First off.
And then it got to the point where it's like, now, you know, as you sell these, we can't just give you your own set, you know, because people would just go with our knives. They want you to spend like $150 to get one, and then kind of the pyramid scheme where it's like, well, you have to pay for your inventory and then sell it.
First
they're like, oh, we're going to interview everybody in the in the next room, and then the second he went into the room, I just scooted out.
I'm picturing you walking door to door selling people knives. I feel like it would only be about three houses in until you were arrested. I'm Burla.
I go in there and I stab them and all. Now I'll get the vacuum to clean your carpet.
I'm Mike.
Oh wait, I screwed
would
up.
Would you
the
like to buy
now.
My knives? Honey, call the police.
I knock with one of the knives so it just goes through the door.
My
look at that quality.
My knives are sharp. Let me show you.
Say you don't like squirrels.
Yeah. I remember one time I went for an interview right out of college, and it was like, oh, sports advertising, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, this could be cool, you know, like, I like sports. I've got a communications degree. This is perfect. So I go, and all it turned out to be was, like, they pulled everyone in a room, and they, like, interviewed you, like, oh, you know, what do you know about advertising? I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I get to. And then it turns out it was just like walking in Kearney, New Jersey, and like towns around, and just selling like ticket packages. Like, hey, you want to buy tickets to the Knicks? You could get for, like, all you were doing was going to businesses and trying to sell things. I'm like, I literally left like a half hour into it. I just walked to my car and left. I'm like, this ain't for me.
I was hoping you were getting that. Remember that dude who did the infomercials about baseball cards when it was still at the tail end?
Be darling.
McGuire's rookie card. You get 9 and a 6.
Yeah.
Look at this. Pristine.
Yeah. Mark McGuire rookie card. Be darling.
Now,
what was his name?
5 years ago, baseball cards were over 1,000% in profit. Who knows where it'll be 50 years from now?
Don West.
There you go.
Yeah, we got Daryl Strawberry's crack pipe.
We got Sammy Sosa when he still looked ethnic.
Pre-Caucasian Sammy Sosa.
That is the craziest look, you know, and he's still claims and all, it's some special cream that made it last week.
Well, I mean, I guess that's a good segue into everybody's talking about it, everybody's watching it, Burlew, is the Michael Jackson documentary, Leaving Neverland. Did you have a chance to partake?
I think I got in about 15 minutes. I'm like, I don't know, this is kind of my thing to sit through for an hour on this, that bad boy.
Yeah, yeah. I think people are pretty damn ignorant if they thought everything was normal with old Wacko Jacko over there, old MJ. This just solidifies it all. I mean, none of it surprised me. I know that people say, like, yeah, he got off on those trials and the FBI investigated him. But we've seen a lot of very rich people get off on things that, you know, the average guy would not get off on. A guy who has more expendable income than me and you will ever see 10 lifetimes combined.
Well, I was listening on the radio today, and they brought up and kind of an interesting point. Like, they brought up R. Kelly and the fun interview that he just did. Mm-hmm. It's kind of amazing when these celebrities come up and you hear stories. For the longest of time, we just kind of like, it's just a joke, and we don't even take it seriously. And then, like, 15 years later, we get details, and it's like, oh.
Yeah.
And it's always nasty. It's kind of like Bill Cosby. Mm-hmm. Like, for the longest of time, I forget the comedian who, like, made jokes down in L.A. where he just literally told people, no, you don't understand. That guy's a full-on rapist.
Oh, Hannibal Buress.
Like,
Hannibal
Buress. And then, like Cosby is supposed to try to sue him and all that stuff, and then then we get to a couple years ago, and it's like, no. When I said he was a rapist,
yeah, Hannibal Buress.
I was not leaving out details.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, not a good couple months for black icons, I guess, if you will. Bill R. Kelly. but then again, you got like every Me Too guy has gone down. But this is a whole other level, like this Michael Jackson stuff. Now, here's the argument people, they don't know, just people are coming out late, blah, 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 blah. This is, he's dead, he can't defend himself. Okay, if he committed 5% of what he's, what he's being accused of, he's still a monster.
Mm-hmm. It's just now, and for anybody who hasn't seen it, like, I mean, the saddest part, it starts off with the guy telling the story of how, like, he won a dance contest, and they were in Australia, I believe, these two.
Yep.
But the kid was so good of a dancer, like Pepsi did a commercial, and they literally shot the commercial where the kid is looking for Michael, and they wanted to make sure the first image they show was him actually seeing Michael Jackson. So mm-hmm. you just see this like 6-year-old kid with like the hugest smile on the planet. And like the second you see it, I'm like, oh god, don't continue the story. I know where this is going. And then like 3 minutes later, he wanted me to suck his nipples. I'm like, oh
yeah, yeah. And that basically goes on for the remaining 3 hours of that documentary, both parts.
It's 3 hours long.
Yeah,
I didn't even know it was that long.
It's 4 hours long. It's two-hour parts. And then there's also an hour Oprah special afterwards.
You know you're disturbing when they could say, no, we got to go another hour, Michael.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, listen, you could say these people are out for money and whatnot, but how many red flags got to go up until people just admit, like, okay. Mr. Jackson was an absolute creep. I mean, how many times does he have to be accused? He's always walking around with children. He's got a theme park in his backyard. He's obviously a very emotionally disturbed man who had a ridiculous childhood, and obviously he transferred that onto children. And you say, well, how do these guys come out? If they are victims. Actual victims of this bad of sexual abuse, a lot of people don't ever want to come out. Ever. They even talk about it like how, they even when they went to testify for him, they wanted to protect him. They still loved him. Like, they didn't think anything he did was wrong until, like, both of them said really around the time when they had sons, like, they started to think about it. The one guy didn't come out until the other guy came out. And, like, thank God I've never been, sexually abused at all. But it's not like it's something I would sit here on the podcast and, like, be openly telling you about right now, like, easily. People repress that and push that down. And, I try to think about, okay, God forbid that happened to me, and knowing my personality now, I don't like big feats of attention. Like, this Saturday was like my bachelor party, and I even said to my fiance, like, I was like, I feel like kind of anxious, like, beforehand. I'm like, all these people are coming out for me and stuff. Like, I don't like that. Like, it's like a so then that, and that's positive attention, right? That's hey, we're coming out for you, hanging out, like. Never mind the worst kind of attention ever, embarrassing attention,
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I will give on the side of the people who say he's just making up the story, I will say, like, watching it and with my wife being a person who's worked with people who's got abused before and items like that, I will say it was kind of weird how naturally he was able to tell the story. Right. And I'm not saying this as a he's definitely lying, he's definitely not lying. But that was kind of one thing that caught my eye, where he's like, it's, you know, there's, it didn't seem like a huge struggle for him to just say, and he asked for this, and he wanted that, and we did this, and we had this, drill where we made sure we were dressed before anybody could get into a room, and items like that. So, right.
But then you get into, like, the... You think that, and you're like, who am I to say, you know, how somebody would reveal that? Maybe he's revealed it a bunch of times and was prepared for this movie, prepared for the interview, you know, like very, very hard, very, very hard gray area to be critical about, even though you have no option but to be critical about, because the guy is dead. So there's no, this isn't ever going to be
resolved,
and justice is never really going to be done. But the other thing is, all these voicemail. Now, these are voicemails which were, you know, in that time were tapes. You know, they were answering machine messages and stuff like that. Like, did they save them all somehow? Like, were they thinking to save them all back then? That's something that I found a little weird. Like, you know, if this is a relationship, me and you are in a relationship right now, and you're sending me messages as part of this ongoing relationship, I'm not sitting there saving every message for, like, 30 years. Now, maybe you save it because it's freaking Michael Jackson, you know, like, not Michael Burlow, it's Michael Jackson, you know, like, maybe you save
it. Come on. Somewhat same level. I mean, not from what that documentary talked about, but you know, the popularity.
Your documentary will be out soon. You're going to see me in, like, a black silhouette, but it's obviously me. He told me he wanted to pet my dog.
He also told me to leave the room, which was weird.
But, so yeah, if you're in this ongoing relationship that's, like, as they describe it, every day, right, every single day, you're saving those kind of things? Or did they just go and find tapes? Did they, you know, as things advance to cell phones, you keep your old answering machine messages and notes and pictures and stuff? So I thought maybe that would have been, that was kind of a little maybe strange, but I don't know. Maybe you keep it because, hey, Michael Jackson's talking to me. No one's ever going to believe this. I don't know.
That is true. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, regardless of the outcome of these two guys, there is way too much. I mean, I'll just flat out say, I think he touched kids. Regardless 100%. Of these two. There's no doubt about it. The only thing I can say is I think what everybody tries to do is feel bad, because we all know it's pretty much well documented. Joe Jackson literally F Michael up to no end and is striving to get as much money as humanly possible. And the kid had no childhood, and that's what every person is saying what led to this stuff. But in the end, it's still insanely monstrous. Whether these two are facts or pretty much what we know he has done and all. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, then that goes into, you know, a lot of people have had pretty horrendous childhoods. Do they go and do what he did? You know, like, a lot of people are able to navigate those waters and figure it out and get therapy. But, you know, there really is only one case like that. Who was ever this big? Elvis? The Beatles, maybe? What? Maybe 10 people on the earth in its history? You know, like...
If Michael's not number one, he's definitely in the top 5 or 10. There's zero doubt about it.
The names that come to my head are like Marilyn Monroe, Michael Jackson, the Beatles, Elvis Presley... You know, that kind of upper echelon where you can't literally can't go out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I mean, they're showing the.
Did you see that one part where they, like, paint? Or I'm not sure if it was there or I saw it on the Joe Rogan podcast where they actually. Michael wanted to know what it was like to shop for groceries. So they paid people to be in the grocery store to just, act normal around him.
Just everything in your life is fake. You know, everything is fake. and people are you're hiring them to give you this experience that's supposed to feel like normal life. Here's an interesting story before we get to our guest here, and we can talk more after this. One of my fiance's boyfriends in Canada was picking up. They live in Canada. They were picking up work, like doing like maintenance on a house or whatever, like a very rich person's house. And you know, doing whatever, different yard work and different, you know, carrying things in and out, whatever, the kind of side work. Because he's like an athlete. Like he's trying to be an Olympic athlete. Like a bobsledder, I believe. So, you know, he's got to pick up these kind of odd jobs and things like that. And long story short, it turns out to be Justin Bieber's house.
Wow.
Now, apparently, Justin Bieber has very strict rules where he doesn't want to see any employees. So it's almost like people have to move in, like, secret. And like load things in, and they were loading because I guess he had just bought this house, so it was all like a new, like bringing in his wardrobe and bringing in furniture and fixing things the way they wanted it. And but he doesn't want to see anything, so it reminds me of that. Like, this, you're almost paying people to try to create this false reality, this false normalness that's just not there. And he's a guy, there's a guy that's so famous that I would never want that fame. In a million years, I would never want that fame.
No.
I mean, I want to be like, if I could ever get famous doing comedy, famous in quotes, I would like a Jim Brewer kind of fame, right? Here's a guy that a lot of people know who he is, but he can go to the grocery store. He can go play at the local place in Chester with his band that we saw him, and no one would know the difference, you know, like, but he's probably successful. You know, like, he's probably successful in what he does. Like, I would never want to go to that up there. Like, even where, like, Sebastian Maniscalco is right now. Like, that's just so famous. Like, I don't think I'd ever want that.
Those guys, I would know exactly my plan. The second I said, I have enough money, I buy, like, a little island, and I just disappear for the rest of my life. You won't know if I'm living or dying. You won't see me around. I will have Amazon ship every single thing to my little tiny island or big estate with big gates or whatever. I will literally disappear the millisecond and say, I don't have to do this anymore.
Hard to say that though, right? Hard to say that though, if that's your, okay, so like, well, let's get into this after the guest. Let's get into this.
All right.
Let's table this conversation for a minute, and we got two guests tonight, so let's get into our first one. All right, Berlo, I think it is it's time to get one of our fine established guests here on the program, if you will.
That's the most enjoyable time in the show, Scotty.
It is.
I think that's our strong point versus...
It's the time...
No, that's our only good point.
It's the time where we don't really have to talk to each other, and we get to, you know, we get to take a break for half hour, 20 minutes. Did you... My grandma always called them programs. Watch my programs. That's what she used to say about TV.
Yeah, that sounds right for an old person. Yeah.
Why are you calling my grandma old?
I think by rule.
You don't know her.
Well, what are you, like, 35? So let's say minimum 18 and 36. So she'd be about 71 at the minimum.
Well, no, she's dead. But,
Oh. Because she's so old. Burn!
Damn, dude. Why are you coming in so hot today?
Ah. You fired up the Burrows. When you tell Mike Berlew he can't do something, he goes right to the center. Bullseye.
I didn't know it was going to be that kind of show. I didn't know we were going that hard. But yeah,
I'm sorry, man. I warned you.
All right. Well, calm down. We got a guest to talk to.
All right.
So we're actually going down by you. I'm a musician. She's very popular in the Athens, Georgia music scene. I was hooked up through our friends over at Ray B Entertainment, who they put a lot of guests. Ooh, I just had a nasty burp. That was very, very Howard Stern 1995 of me right there.
Yeah, but, very extreme where we're going here tonight.
Shock jocks. Mm-hmm. But I was put in touch by our friends at Ray B Entertainment, who have hooked us up with a lot of musicians over the years now. We have a good working relationship with them, and they're hooking us up with a woman by the name of Thayer Serrano. And she does a lot of psychedelic, kind of punky kind of vibe at some points, but she's a pretty popular musician, and she's going to be at South by Southwest. So we're going to give Thayer a call here. So, Thayer, first off, thank you so much for popping on with us for a few minutes here. I guess a good place to start, I had just seen today, so Ray over at Raby has hooked us up with a lot of artists over the years to talk to one another, and I saw that you were one of the artists that's playing at South by Southwest.
Yeah.
What's that like? Like, what is your, how many nights a week are you playing? Like, what is the, is this your first time doing it, or?
I've done it many times, and this year it's very laid back. I'm playing a show with my band on Saturday, and I'm actually a side person as well. And so I'm supporting some friends down there and just kind of going down there. Yeah, it's the most laid back time I've ever had, where my band only has the one show, which is an awesome show. It's Athens in Austin, which is where I'm from, so it's always like a really cool reunion of people from Athens and everywhere, you know.
So when you're doing a festival like that, is it, especially when you're playing like a show, like you said, does it become more of a fan experience for you, like during the week, or are you just in and then you're out of there?
We're going down on Wednesday or Thursday. I'm playing with my friend Parker Gisbert a few times, and then leaving on Sunday.
Gotcha.
So, is it more fun or nerve-wracking when you're performing in your home state?
In what? Sorry.
When you're performing a show in your home state.
Oh, my home state, which is Georgia.
Yep.
Actually.
Oh, no.
She's from Georgia. The festival's not in Georgia. Gotcha.
Correct.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's in Austin, Texas. And then we're doing our album release in Georgia at home in Athens, which I'm really looking forward to because everybody who was involved with the record, you know, is able to be there. It's not how I'm able to tour, but
right.
For the hometown show, I get to have like a really huge band and a male choir and all the fun, you know, like visuals and production and all the things I would do if I had a big budget.
Yeah.
you can do it in your hometown. And so it's, you know, it's really special and to share it with the people that made it, you know?
Yeah. So now being able to check out your music the last few weeks, I hear definitely a lot of different styles kind of blending together. I get a lot of influences, but what was your background? Were you were you a kid growing up playing guitar? Were you classically trained? Were you someone who just in a garage band? How'd you come up?
I came up as a classical pianist, actually, which is really different than what my band is, but it's kind of been more of a helpful skill set just for music in general, I guess. But I don't play piano in my band. But I grew up in like a very classical family, and then went to school with a piano scholarship to pay for school, and then I just kind of started collaborating with other people, and I always wrote a lot of instrumental music. I kind of thought I would just like score movies and just be a composer, and that, you know, I never thought I would necessarily sing because I was so shy that seemed like, you know, for some reason way different than playing. I could play in front of, you know, thousands of people, but singing was just like, oh my God. And then I just, at some point, something just switched where I just had these songs I wanted to sing and sang with a lot of other people just because I was already playing with them, you know, like not a lot of like thought went into it. It was just kind of like what you do, like you're there and you just sing. And then I had songs and I tried to get them to sing them and they'd say, just sing your own songs. What are you doing?
Right.
And so I kind of got more confident doing it, and then fell in love with it. And then, you know, musically for, I just love Neil Young and Crazy Horse and Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds and Radiohead and, I don't know, all kind of, you know, David Lynch, like, kind of gravitated towards some of the, I guess, some of that heaviness, like, that 90s stuff. I was growing up in time, and so...
I don't know if you're influenced on, but I even hear some, like, Sonic Youth in your music sometimes.
Oh, yeah, I love Sonic Youth, and, you know, like, there's just things that, you know, I think that I learn how to do more of what I hear in my head the longer I do it. And so each time I put out a record, people will notice some new influence that I've always loved. I just suddenly was like, you know, it just comes out in time in you. It all kind of just swims around, I think, in our heads, you know, and then you learn how to use this pedal or do this or get some, you know, knowledge in engineering. And then you're like, oh, that's how they did that. And then, and you know, so I think it kind of, I think everything that I've been really into, whether it was, you know, the classical music or Southern, you know, and like churchy music in the South or grunge in the 90s growing up or all these, I think they all just kind of, you know, make up this thing in the back of my mind. And I'm always just kind of trying to work with what I can do. That's one of the reasons actually I played guitar in my band from the beginning was because I wasn't interested in like making all these crazy compositions on piano and singing over them. I just wanted it to be like a drone and bend notes around like distortion. Right. And I tried to bend the piano like with my mind. No, I mean, you know, you're just like hitting two notes, like, come on, what's in between, you know, like you can't bend it. And so it's been cool to like, I kind of write material based within my own limitations and then my own growth at the same time. So it's always kind of in that world of just the thing I just want to come out and it comes out. And then later I'll say, oh, I can see how like, you know, this Neil Young influenced this choice or, you know.
Yeah. No, let me ask you, since you said you were classically trained, you know, on a piano, but a lot of times when you get to, like, this type of music, working with pedals and working with, like you said, bending, do you think classically, or are you a musician that has kind of evolved to more of what you're hearing and feeling? Because I know, like, when I played, I was always, like, an ear guy. I was always by ear, never classically trained, but I was wondering if you see like a mix of that, since you do have the background in it.
I kind of think of it as like two brains and I can go in and out of them if I want to, if that makes sense. Like I know that the theory is there. I mean, I learned how to read music and all the scales and everything before I could read, I think. And so I don't really have any memories of like not knowing all of the notes of every single scale, but I also could care less, you know, like who cares if you're classically trained? I almost don't even want to talk about it. But then at the same time, I value it because it does give me, you know, kind of this way to, if I need to do something, I can just do it.
Right.
But I definitely don't write I feel like the way I write music and play in my band is just very primitive. And it has nothing to do with my training. That's how I feel. But I also think, like, on some level, can I really say that? Because isn't everything we learned, you know, in us?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and when I play with other people, like when I'm taking a solo or something, I'm just kind of lost and I'm like out of my body when I'm playing. But then I realize I was allowed to go out of my body because my hands knew where to go, because I did learn stuff. You know,
right.
it's like the training allows you to just be crazy, crazier. You're more free, I guess. You know, that's something like, I guess, they talk about painters, you know, like Picasso knew, was classically trained, but then, you know, chose what rules he wanted to break, I guess. I don't know.
Now, what's so heavy? You said that one time you were playing like 15 different bands. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, in Athens. I mean, that's pretty common. It's a small town. And I was, you know, younger and like college age. And I would just say yes to everyone because everyone was cool. Like, it was really fun. And they're all pretty different, you know. Definitely like an art rock scene and stuff like that there. But I played with country legend and an experimental group and a reggae band and like a western swing band and
nice.
Just like made noise one time with a friend of mine who was throwing rice at his guitar and, you know, played like some jazz stuff. Like it's just, there's a lot going on there, but it's really small. So it's kind of like the people that you hang out with and you just play with them.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just about to say, when you're playing so many different genres and all, it must be so much easier to kind of go, oh, I like that, and bring that over and you kind of twist it this way to kind of make your own sound. Would you say that?
Yeah, I mean, I've never played guitar with anybody else. And I, well, actually, I did play rhythm guitar in this one band one time, and it was awesome, but it was only one show. But anyway, I want to do that again. Just in the background, like,
just you know, be able to rock out and not worry too much.
Yeah. Yeah, just like have my head down, just like wearing a t-shirt, just like whatever. But no, I think you know, I've learned, it helps me a lot with like, I've had bands, like I used to play in that band of Montreal from Athens, one of the bigger bands from there, and that was a lot of programming and synth stuff and things like that required that I had never done before. So I just learned, you know, on the fly and taught myself a lot to match how to do that sound of the record that I was hired to play. And that was a lot. That was a big thing because I learned a lot about engineering. And I think that helped me so much to be able to do more engineering on my own, because then I could, you know, I can make recordings to show what I'm trying to do instead of just trying to tell somebody.
Right.
You know, like, make it purple or, you know, whatever that joke. Like, you can just, you know, kind of get close, or I can make demos get pretty close. Or, you know, a lot of times we just use some of my, we use a lot of my demos in the final stuff anyway. We just kind of, you know,
yeah, well,
put them in there.
Let's talk about that. I always like to ask musicians, so other than throwing rice at a guitar, what are you are you guys do you demo everything out? Do you write it, or are you kind of jam it out in practice and figure out a song, or do you, like, what is your writing process generally?
I usually just I mean, I've written and performed everything. Usually I just go in the studio with a drummer, and he, I've worked with two different drummers and they're both amazing, and in Athens, and they know me, and they'll kind of come up with the part right then in the studio, and then I'll just play on top of that. You know, and that's not necessarily a philosophical way I believe in recording. It's more of a budget thing.
Right.
But you know, I don't know, like, some, like this last record, I produced it because and played everything but drums, well, and the male vocals, because those songs just came to me all at once, like completed, like they came to me produced when I wrote them. So I kind of just, I kind of thought, well, even if it just is terrible and everyone hates it, I at least have to just get it, you know, get this one out, and then, you know, the next one I can always work with. I'd love to work with a live band as a session player. I get to do that a lot, and it's really fun to be in a live band in the studio. It just obviously is a lot more of a, you know, upfront expense and stuff. But yeah, I guess that's kind of how it goes.
You kind of said the phrase that me and Scott say every week, which is, this is probably going to be terrible. We got to get this out.
Yeah, exactly. And then I don't know, it was like, it was kind of I felt kind of crazy and lonely at times. I'd be like, is this all just a terrible idea, you know, just playing all these parts? And but you know, it goes very quickly because I have them in my head and I just play them. But at the same time, you're like, now if everyone hates it, it's only me they can hate.
Right. So tell us
I'll blame the drummer.
Tell us about the new album. When's it come out, and what can people expect?
March 29th.
All right, that's soon.
Yeah. Yes, I can't wait. It is called Wings Alleluia. It's 9 songs, but the last song is the title track, and it's 10 minutes long.
Oh,
yep.
Did we lose her?
Did we lose her?
I was talking, and then I kind of like.
Yeah, all of a sudden we dropped that. We tried calling, it didn't call back. But what are you gonna do?
Yeah, sorry.
His interview was so hot, it blew up her phone.
That's
guy.
It.
It's insane.
The tweets were just coming in like crazy, you know?
I'm so sorry. Yeah, I was like, oh, I guess that wasn't very funny at all. I looked at my phone and shit. I was like nothing.
Well, I mean, the last thing we had asked you was about your album. So let's just start from there, and I'll be able to splice it all back together.
The new album has, this new thing with the some male choral arrangements I did, which was really fun to hear them with a real choir, the Athens Cowboy Choir, actually. It's already choir, or a choir that already exists, and they sang on it. And then I think sonically it's maybe heavier in some ways, but there's also still some stripped down times. Yep. And the lyrical content is more of a, you know, more of a uplifting like message of, I think, just love is the simplest way to put it, but you know, kind of more like a transcendent kind of, you know, consciousness wanting to expand and be part of, you know, like hope for things. So that makes me excited to get to sing about things like that now instead of all the sad, terrible things that I used to sing about. Just kidding. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of it.
Oh, that's cool. And can you tell us a little bit about the work you do at Camp Amped?
Oh, I'd love to. Camp is my favorite thing. It is a teenage rock camp. Guys and girls at this place called Nucci Space in Athens, which is it's a suicide prevention center and a musicians mental health resource center, a community resource center, and even physical medical help sometimes for musicians. It's just a really great place. They have these 4 practice rooms there, and so musicians can rent them by the hour for really cheap to practice, and it's kind of just always open door. You can just walk in and talk to somebody anytime, and they'll set you up with a counselor, you know, offsite at an actual counseling office. So there's confidentiality and stuff, you know, but it's really beautiful. And the camp was I believe this will be the 12th year.
Awesome.
And all the counselors are my closest friends and my family there. And my bandmates all came from there. And, you know, we tell the kids always when the camp ends, they say, I just want my band to stay together. And I'm like, I did it. You can do it too. Guys are my band. They come together. It's 20 kids, and they play already. And so it's a lot about kind of communication and compromise and, you know, just like ideas of things they can do. It's mostly focused on just rock and roll, playing songs and writing songs, but there's this kind of really beautiful underlying current of this kind of mental health, healthiness, you know, survival skills for creative minds is what it's called. And each day we kind of talk about something like how to make mistakes on stage, but you know, there's kind of this undercurrent of like, it's okay if you mess up in life, you know, like how to recover and kind of stuff like that. So all centered around, you know, just making awesome music together, and it's so fun.
Awesome. I mean,
that's really cool.
At first it just sounded like when you said musician camp, it sounded like something like Jack Black would star in, like some kind of movie. But here in the underlying thing, it's really awesome. It sounds like you're doing some awesome work.
It's so exciting.
I want to thank you for coming on for a little while, and we're excited for the new album. If people want to go check you out or say hi or check out your stuff, if they've never heard of you, where's the best place to reach out?
I have a website that's theyareserrano.com, and that has everything. But I'm on Instagram mostly as far as social media goes as well. It's just theyareserrano. And, all the places where you stream music were there too.
Awesome. So enjoy South by Southwest. Good luck with the new album, and thank you for giving us some time.
Oh, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
What a nice lady.
Yeah.
She's very friendly.
God, I get to make a list.
Yeah, when she meets you, she's going to regret that instantly.
Yeah. Aw, I got there and she took the pen down and crossed it off.
I'm here for the Thayer Serrano concert. But
No, I'm on the list. It's Douglasville Burlew. Very clearly it has to be on that list.
Douglasville Burlew. The one and only Thayer Serrano. Go check her album out. Very nice person. Makes some cool music. So for sure, go check it out. All right. So we are joined by Mark Tappan. Am I saying that correctly, Mark?
Tappan. Tappan, actually.
Oh, well, I'm going with Old Tappan in New Jersey. But
in Old Tappan, which you take the Tappan Zee Bridge to get to, I think that is the most convoluted thing in the world.
So it changes once you get to the bridge, it changes the pronunciation of the vowel.
Exactly, yeah. It's a hard border.
And we are also joined by Paula, let me try this one, Aldarelli.
Very good.
All right, beautiful. At least I got one out of two ain't bad. One out of two ain't bad. But guys, we are...
try not. Not my name, Scott.
Yeah, well, we don't care about your name. But...
okay.
First off, I want to thank the two of you for coming on. Mark, you had reached out probably a couple months ago, and not only are you part of a pretty sweet band, but you guys are part of a festival that is coming. I guess you could call it a festival, right? That is coming up.
It's an event. A fundraiser event. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll call it a festival because it makes it sound more exciting.
Yeah, there you go.
No, but you guys are part of something called Earthshare. Through Earthshare, New Jersey Rocks at the Stone Pony on March 23rd. So that's coming up next weekend already. So I guess let's start with the actual event and kind of work ourselves backwards to the band and the actual foundation. So what is the event?
Well,
the event—it's a veritable, it's a carnival of.
See.
Words, yeah. it's a fund. It's to help fund Earthshare New Jersey, which is a great organization in New Jersey, which goes to funding other environmental organizations, which Paula can talk a lot about because she's actually involved with Earthshare. I'm just the singer in a band.
Right.
She's the one who's got all that information.
All right, so Paula, let's start there then. What is Earthshare and what do they do?
Well, Earthshare New Jersey was formed by environmental groups in the state of New Jersey to help raise awareness and money for them. And the reason why the money that's raised through Earthshare New Jersey is important is because it's unrestricted money. So it doesn't have strings attached to it. So they can use it where they need to use money. And writing grants, you can't always get money to pay staff or to pay for electrical or facilities and things like that. But you can't imagine taking your kids or your child's class going to a school trip and not having a nature center to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, without some of the funding, those things don't exist.
Right.
So what we do is we raise money for these groups. We raise awareness for these groups. We currently have 17 environmental nonprofits from all over New Jersey. These are groups that work on air, water, land, wildlife issues. They have nature centers. They have educational talks that they do. They have cleanups that they do. They manage hiking trails. You name it. If it's outside, they've got their hands in it.
So, so what is it that you do for the foundation?
Well, I'm the executive director for Earthshare New Jersey. So I manage everything that Earthshare New Jersey does. For this particular event, this was something we came up with because we wanted to find new ways of raising money for our nonprofit members. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, people gave through us, through workplace giving programs where they'd fill out a pledge card and we'd process that for our members. But a lot of the workplaces are changing today. But these members still have a need for funding and awareness. So this program evolved as a result of that. This is the third annual Earthshare New Jersey Rocks event being held at the Stone Pony. It's doubled in size each year. We're already on track to do that again this year.
Perfect.
The talent that comes out to support us is phenomenal. Mark can talk about that. And the great thing is it's an awesome way to connect people with the environment through music. You know, one of the great things about this concert has been the talent that's come out to support it. The musicianship that all of these bands have to offer. But Mark and the Dirty Shine really have stepped up. And after year one where they came out to, yeah, we'll be a part of it, and they closed the show last year. Mm-hmm. By the end of the night, they were like, Paula, we want to help you do this, make it bigger and better next year. And Mark has definitely been a big part of our success this year as well.
And I think Mark's back with us.
Yeah, here I am. Any better?
try to answer the question that we were talking about where we said, how did you hook up with the Earthshare people?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Last year we were asked to perform, and we had a great time. It was a great event, and it's always fun and rewarding playing for a cause, doing something more than just playing for a night out. And so when they asked us to do it again this year, we were more than happy to get involved and to do a little bit more, to really get involved and do some press for it. Donate a guitar that we're having painted by an Asbury Park artist. So she's doing a custom paint job on it. We're gonna be raffling that off on the night and put in the effort to get a lot of other things besides just a night of bands at the Stone Pony that you can have at any other night. We're going to have some presenters. We're going to have Aloha Rick from the Surf Rider Foundation is going to be there giving a little presentation and hopefully getting the surfer community out to support him.
Nice.
And everything that Earthshare does to support environmental education and cleanup throughout the state.
That's awesome.
One of the things we added to the concert this year is we are going to have people come up, and people who some folks might know from the news or from their communities, and talk about why New Jersey's environment is important to them. Because what a lot of people don't realize is that New Jersey's environment is one of the largest revenue producers for the state of New Jersey. Whether you're talking about tourism, you're talking about the vineyards and the breweries, which are all such a big part of the state. If we don't have clean water and we don't have good, clean soil, we don't have fresh air, we don't have any of these things for people to enjoy. So it really is important to protect the environment. We're going to be kind of getting that message home in between great music this year.
That's awesome. So I guess, Mark, let's talk quickly about your band. So you sent me a couple songs and I checked them out. You got like a very talented band, you got a good kind of old soul, a little bit blues to you. And, there's a lot of good things going on guitars. Did you start off as a solo act, or were you kind of always a band? Cause you kind of got, I could see how that can go either way in your songwriting.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're all solo at some point, right?
Right. Some more than others.
It came together. I had a bunch of songs. I've been playing music and supporting music, touring, as a guitar tech and as a musician for a long time, and just writing songs and going in and out of bands and just playing other people's songs and kind of squirreling my own songs away. And I wanted to do an album, and I needed some guys, and I've been in the blues kind of jam scene in the area, and the Tim Boyko, I know Tim, that's how we hooked up. I mean, you know, through like the, you know, the solo singer songwriter kind of scene, but through the blues scene, I got my guys, the rest of Dirty Shine, Ted Palumbo and Brian Sachs, they're awesome, and it's great to have that kind of talent and that kind of, they are old souls, you know, we're all old souls, and talented, seasoned musicians behind me, and then we have some younger members too. We have Emily Grant on sax, and Tia Bacher and Kat Verderosa are backing us up on vocals. So, you know, you heard some stuff. You heard some of the early stuff where it was just the three of us,
right?
Me and Ted and Brian, and we've really grown. So, you know, we like to give a good show. So that's the other thing about March 23rd. You know, the music is going to be all over the place in a good way. You know, sort of spanning the spectrum from rock to funk to, like I said, what we're doing, kind of original rock and funk and soul, and you know, kind of regurgitating the same old stuff, but in our way. Yeah, and just, you know, good rock shows all night long, and then for a good cause too, like Paul was saying, the other things that we have lined up, the speakers and presenters and raffle and all for a good cause. So we want people to come on out, and that's why we're doing these things. And so yeah, thanks for having us too again.
Yeah, one of the other great thing for the night is that tickets are only $20 a piece. Come on out.
There you go.
You're getting a phenomenal show, a free T-shirt, and food.
That's awesome. Now, are there going to be now? It's obviously for an environmental cause. In between bands or surrounding the event, what kind of environmental education or are there speakers at all going on? Or is it more just a rock show completely?
No, there's going to be, in between the bands, there's approximately 15 minutes between each band changing over. So we're blessed to have legendary DJ Lee Merwicki is going to be emceeing the show for us.
Nice.
And we've got folks who are going to be coming up talking about the environment, why it's important to them. And then some of the members of Earthshare New Jersey are going to be coming up to say what they're doing and how people can get involved. You know, I don't want to tilt our hand too early, but we have Surf Rider, you know, Mark already mentioned Aloha Rick is going to be coming up to talk, and the Surf Rider Foundation is going to be coming up. You know, anybody who is aware of all the plastics conversations in the state of New Jersey, Surf Rider Foundation has been very involved with the elimination of plastic bags. But on top of that, in the Asbury Park community, they've done just an amazing job of keeping the beaches clean and getting awareness to people. They work with kids, teaching them how to surf and everything else. They're just phenomenally giving back to the community. When you think about it, if we don't have a clean environment, we don't have a good community either.
Now that you've been doing this, now that's going to be the third year, tell us about, like, have you been pleasantly surprised by the outcomes, or what have you learned from people coming up and all that's helped out the cause?
Well, the interesting thing for me was year one when we did this concert, I was a little disheartened because we didn't get the big push that we thought we had. And people who attended, including the bands, are the ones who said to me, this is a phenomenal event. This is going to be huge, and you have to keep doing it. You have to keep doing it. As I said, year two, it tripled in size. Year two, one of the members of one of the bands actually was just so excited about being a part of it that he actually came and joined our board of directors because he could totally see that this is a great avenue by which to provide people with some environmental education, but also get some much-needed funding for these nonprofit organizations. So it's a way that people can go out, have fun, support a cause, but hear great music. And we try to make sure that there's a variety of music for the evening, and that's what we have this year. Free Pass is going to be kicking off the show. They are a band from Staten Island that plays all over the tri-state area. But they play everything. They play classic rock, dance, pop, They even throw some country in there, and they're going to get that crowd rocking. Band number two is going to be the Troubles. This is the third year that they've been playing with us, and this is a band that's going to play the songs that you love but you never hear on the radio, you never hear on a regular basis when you're going to a bar, listening to cover bands. These are the gems that just spark so much emotion in people. And then band three is New Soul Rebellion. They're a new band. They've got a funky beat to them. They're going to be very exciting. They've got a full brass section back there. And then closing our show again will be Mark and the Dirty Shine. And,
oh, I heard they stink. You know, I heard bad things about them.
I would just keep on yelling, "We want Bruce," and see what happens.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I do that. That's actually, if you ever seen my show, that's actually 20 minutes of my set.
that's your closer, right? That's how you guys are. You
that's
encore.
Opener and closer. That's opener and closer, yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a really cool event. If people want to, I guess we'll do two things. If people want to, one, check out the event and get information on that, where should they go? And if they want to check out Earthshare, where should they go?
Well, you can go to the same place for both.
Okay.
You can visit us on the web at earthsharenj.org. And right from there, you can learn more about what we're doing. But right at the headline up there, the header at the top, you can go in, and the first thing you're going to see is about Earthshare New Jersey Rocks. And you can click on that. It'll bring you to a page with information about the event, and you can also purchase tickets there. The other place you can go is directly to our Facebook page, because you can purchase tickets from our event set up on the page there as well.
Awesome. And then, Mark, if people
Make sure I just want to say that, just make sure your people know that it's a 6:30 show.
6:30.
The evening show. There's an afternoon show, too, that's not ours, and
yeah,
doors are at 6:30, and we're at night.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a six. Yeah, doors open at 6:30. Music starts kicking in 6:45, 7 o'clock, and we're going to be rocking straight through to 11 o'clock.
That's awesome. Yeah. And Mark, if people want to check out the Dirty Shine, what's the best place to go check out your music and say hello to you guys?
You know, the bar is always the best place.
Just the bar. Just pick one.
The Blue Moon at South Amboy is where we're usually at. But yeah, Facebook, you know, Facebook's the Dirty Shine. Everybody's on Facebook, and so are we.
Awesome. Well, Paula, Mark, I wish you guys the mass success with the event. It sounds like you're doing good things, and it sounds like you have obviously a good cause behind it, and it just sounds like a good time overall. So good luck with it, and I hope to talk to you guys next year about year four.
Absolutely. Mike and Scott, thanks for having us.
No problem.
Yeah, thank you. Come on through.
All right. Should we tell them now that that you'll be closing that show?
Well, you know, I mean, Dirty Shine, then Douglasville Burloo.
Special guest, Douglasville Burloo. Who the hell is that?
Oh, okay!
Who? Be great if people were chanting Bruce for 30 minutes straight, and then you come out.
Oh, I thought you were yelling Doug. You know, that's short for my name. So,
what is he doing? Is he singing? Is he doing? What is he doing? Turns out he's just making.
Yep, so support the environment on March 23rd, and then in April, see Scott talk about cats.
Yeah, I was just gonna say. So you have a lot of things going on in Asbury Park. You got the Earthshare Festival, and then a couple weeks later, you can see me and some fellow comedians attempt to do a cat convention. The Asbury Park Cat Convention. It's coming quickly, April 13th, I think. So. That's that.
Time does not slow down for cat conventions, Johnny.
All right. The Dirty Shine. All right. So, Thayer Serrano and the Earthshares, not together, and the Earthshares festival, I guess, or event. So go check both of those things out. Now, before we were talking. We were talking about the Michael Jackson documentary and fame and stuff like that. So I didn't want to end the conversation, but I did want to get to our guests. So before that, we were talking about that level of fame on what you would do. And I, the last thing I remember saying that that's hard though, right? Like take a guy who's as hot as fire right now, like I mentioned before, like Sebastian, right? He's arguably number one comic in the world, you know, right now, hottest. I don't mean like a guy like Chappelle who's been hot for 10, 15 years, like as far as like up and coming, right? Now, here's a guy who spent the last 20, 25 years doing stand up. That's his love. I mean, I read his book. Like, you know, he was working at the Four Seasons, like in LA, and then he would, on his break, be able to go do a set at the Comedy Store and then come back to work. And that's his passion. And he traveled around. And let's say he gets even bigger and does one more comedy special and makes all the money he'll ever need in the entire world, which he probably already has, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very hard to just live, right? Just to be like, oh, I got, you know, at your house. And I don't know, man. I always feel like you still, even as much fame as you have, you got to have a reason to wake up in the morning. You know, you got to have a reason to put your shoes on and go do something. I don't think I can just sit forever.
I wouldn't say sit forever, but even if you get out of the limelight for a long enough period of time, I mean, look at some of these celebrities who kind of like disappear. Like bring up a name, Rick Moranis. He was a huge movie star.
Well, that's because he shrunk. He's hard to find.
Yeah, well, I mean, he did the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. He
didn't disappear. He's just small.
Oh, okay. So he used a shrink ray, and that's why we don't see him.
Exactly. You saw the movie, didn't you?
Well, I didn't know it was a documentary. I'm sorry. I didn't know Disney went that deep.
Oh, but, they go deep.
Yeah. But, like, his wife passed away, and, like, he could have still gone out and done a ton of stuff, and he literally said, you know what, I'm here with my kids, I don't need to go back, I have no reason for any of that lifestyle, it's nothing I'm gonna rank on it, but it's just I'm happy here. And he stopped, and he's living off all the money he made in the 80s, and God bless him.
Yeah,
that's what I would say, something like that.
Hold on, let's reconnect to you're starting to get choppy. Michael Berlew's getting all choppy, getting choppy, choppy. He's getting real choppy. Michael Berlew's getting choppy. Yeah, but I don't know, man. You got to me. You gotta have some kind of something that gets you going. Like, what are you doing? You're writing. Are you like, especially if you're like doing something creative? You know, like. A musician, like, you're never gonna, if that's your passion, you're not gonna stop making music completely. I don't know, maybe, but, or even maybe you pursue something completely different than you know. It's just very hard to tell someone to stop.
I mean, I guess it all depends on what's in your head and whatever, because, who's to say when you get that big and you can't do, like, a regular thing, do you still have the same passion when you know this is the thing that's stopping you from it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's other things you can do. You can write articles. You can even do, like, even if you did, like, a YouTube series or something like that where it's like, I'm not going to tell you where I'm at, but here's some videos of some funny stuff. You can still generate stuff that way without needing to go out and basically calm down the fire, if you will, and allow you to get back into a normal life.
I guess that's the tough question, though, right? Like, no one, I mean, people do, but no one sets out at a hobby or something I guess people do, but most people realize they're not going to be the next Michael Jackson. They're not going to be the Justin Bieber. Hell, they're not going to be the Limp Bizkit. It's not going to happen, okay?
Limp Bizkit?
Well, I was thinking of, like, someone that faded away. That was the first one I could think of.
Oh, okay. I thought you put Limp Bizkit in Michael Jackson territory. I'm like, damn.
Fred Durst is pretty creepy. So.
When he's in My Way or the Highway, it's like, damn, that's legend.
I should explain myself. I was trying to think of an artist that like hit it big for a couple years, and that was the end of them. But you don't strive to just become the biggest thing. You do it because you love it, and then your love and talent usually takes you to the next place, and then the money and fame follows. So I don't know. All in all, I think this just solidified what a lot of us already thought about Michael Jackson. I realize how much his music meant to people. I mean, everyone, who doesn't love a good Michael Jackson song? But, you know, the man's a freaking creep. I mean,
I think Pete Davidson put it best and all, when you love somebody's music, but they're a damn creep, and I'll just send a dollar every time you listen to one of their songs to some charity to make yourself feel better.
Yeah, right. Nobody would do that, but
no. It's a good thought, but everyone would go, yeah, and then like forget the next week after they
go through three
R. Kelly tracks.
ABC.
Now, on the target, no, I don't think I ever said on the podcast how I had a close call when I was a young age and all, and I could have been danger of. I remember how long it was. I was still living in Pennsylvania at the time.
I think it was in the first grade.
And like our neighborhood, we always had like a couple different ice cream, and we had a snow cone person come through, and all, like we had a bunch of different like treats that would come in during the afternoon.
First up, before we go any further, snow cone. What a jib. Whoever liked snow cones always bothered me.
I like snow. I mean, it won't be my first pick, but I like snow cones.
They just, you would eat that one middle part that was flavorful, and the rest was just straight up ice.
Well, you just gotta let it, I mean, you gotta make sure you got the right person who put a little crevice in the middle and let the juice get down at the bottom so you're having a full flavor outburst at the end.
First off, please never say full flavor outburst again. And second off, I guess I just didn't have a good snow cone guy where I lived.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, you got them Jersey snow cone people. They don't know what they're doing. Us people in Philly and all, we're like, look at these clowns.
I hope the end of your story is that the creepy snow cone guy was the guy that almost molested you. Oh,
okay. No, it was the ice cream guy, not the snow cone guy. Sorry.
They're all cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, So basically, one time I remember, like, the ice cream guy was coming. It was me, a friend named Kenny, I think a girl named April as well. And we ran down to the ice cream guy. And at the time, we didn't have any money, me and Kenny. And all the parents weren't around, so I didn't have any money. So we go down, and the guy was there, and April had money, so she got her ice cream. We're like, we want ice cream. We don't have any money. And he's like, I can't give you an ice cream. You got to give me something or whatever. We need to get an ice cream. And then he starts going, come into my truck and take off your shoes and socks, and I'll give you an ice cream.
What?
No! And then he kept on pursuing, and he kept on adding clothing.
Stop.
And to God. And he's like, get in here and take off your shoes and socks and your shirt, and I'll give you a nice
no.
Hand to God. Yeah, and we didn't even blink an eye. And what I forgot to say was, like, the week before when this happened and we had no money, he gave us both gumballs. He gave us that to, and since we didn't have money for ice cream, so the reason we went there the second time was figuring, okay, well, maybe we'll get
that's
something.
That's how he get. What's sick is he probably thought about that.
Yeah.
He probably thought, like, if I give these two poor kids who never have money, maybe they'll come back looking for something else. This is sick. Ew, man.
Yeah. We didn't blink an eye. Like, he kept on upping the offer, and we're like, no, and we went back. And hand to God, I totally forgot about it, never blinked an eye to it. Never had another time I remember seeing the guy. And then, like, I think I was in, like, high school, and one day I was just, like, thinking about Pennsylvania. I'm like, oh, thank God, oh.
Oh, man.
Because if I even recall, I forget it was me or Kenny, like, we were always tail end renegotiating. No, let's go back to just, like, the shoes or something to that effect.
Wow.
Like, trying to negotiate with them, but needless to say, if we got into that truck, it won't end in a good any way. So
yeah, it wouldn't end in an HBO documentary either.
Yeah. So that was my little story. No, and I didn't blink an eye. I remember telling my dad that one day. He's like, "Why didn't you say anything?" I'm like, "And God, I didn't think of anything until it was way down the road."
Well, there's a perfect example, right? Like, there's an example. You didn't even, like, you know, you were on the brink of something bad happening, or it didn't happen, and you suppressed it and put it somewhere that you didn't think of for decades later. Like, think about someone who's going through that, you know? Like, they're just compartmentalizing it and putting it somewhere where they don't want to think about it. I don't, or they don't even realize it's bad until they're older and understand what the hell happened.
Yeah, when they first activate, like, a little game between us. And, oh, it's a little naughty, but it's nothing. And then down the line, it's just like,
well, even the guy in the documentary was saying that Michael Jackson and him would be holding hands in public, and they would do, like, this, like, finger thing, like they would tickle the inside of their hand. That's how we would show that I'm thinking of you sexually. Like, that's how I'm thinking of you. That's how we show our love. Like,
sick world.
That's like, I worked. I feel like every one of my stories when I talk about weird characters comes back to when I worked at the pool. Mm-hmm. We talked about Kenny and his oil spot. there was another guy, George, and George. George had, like, he was probably like 70 years old, but he thought he was like still like a greaser. Like, he still, like, he definitely dyed his hair blonde and had like that slick back, like, you know, look. And he had like a comb in his pocket and white shirt with rolled up sleeves, and tight pants. And George limped and never swam once. George, like, he looked like he may have like a deformed leg, like a polio leg or something like that. Mm. And George would sit all the time as we were, there was another family that came with two younger girls, and George would always bring his camera and just be taking photos of the girls, like, nonstop, like having them pose and things like that.
I think I remember you talking about this before on one of the shows. Yeah.
And we were always like, oh man, like, to a point where, like, we were like, the manager, like, we almost had, I think he eventually had to say something like, hey, you can't take, because he would try to take pictures, and then he eventually would start to try to take pictures with the like female staff. Like, no, remember, we were 16, 17, I was probably 17, 18, like, I was, because I was like assistant managing the pool, so the employees were like 15, 16, whatever, and he would try to take pictures of them, and just very creepy, because you're sitting there and you're watching the mom sit there. And you're like, oh, pose like this, pose like that. Like, just buying into it. And that guy was definitely a creep. He had all the signs.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah, God, what happened to this world?
Ice cream trucks.
Yeah. Ice cream trucks and pools. Stay away from them, kids.
That's it. What do you got, Berlo? Anything?
Not tonight. No. I mean, we're pretty...
Yeah.
I think I dropped enough tonight on that last story. So.
Yeah, that's something. That's something.
Yeah. I guess one small little update on stuff. As we were talking about last week's show, James Harrison from the Kentucky Reptile Zoo, him and Kristen Wiley, who helped set up the interview, they were in a news article on the Daily Independent. They actually sent me over the link, so I'll share that out on our different social medias, and another interview where they talk about their zoo and their history with everything reptile related.
Sweet.
And another update on a past episode, I bumped into the pirate/cowboy two times now at Kroger's.
Okay.
Since our episode.
All right.
And I'm starting to feel bad because I'm starting to question if the gentleman has a home right now.
I thought you were saying you're starting to feel bad because he asked you to come take off your shoes and socks.
No. He was not an ice cream truck, my pirate cowboy guy.
Guarantee he's saving up for one.
Yeah. Me and Izzy were shopping around for a couple things, and he was actually in the store. He's usually always in the front. I'd never seen him shop before, so this was actually the first time he was in there. and we saw him, and we pleasantly said hi, and he was very kind back and all.
Did you say howdy?
No, he... How do you word it? No, he's like, oh, hello, I hope you have a glorious and wonderful, blessed Saturday today. Something to that effect. And it was cute and nice, and then we checked out, and then we saw him in the front, and he used the same line again, which made me start to question, okay, is that the only thing he says, or is it a...
You guys should be used to this kind of thing. It's like being at Disney World. It's just some weird character walking around that has a catchphrase that, you know, he's dressed up in costume. It's just like, it's like Disney in Douglasville.
No, well, I'd rather not, because then Izzy would push me to do that every time and all instead of vacation.
What's funny is if you took that man and you placed him into Disney, he would not look weird at least for a couple days.
He would probably fit in. I will give, with all the creepy conversations, I will give Disney credit. They have a stern rule that, like, no adults can, like, dress up in costumes.
Really?
Or anything like that. Well, it's specifically so nobody goes, come here, little kitty, for lack of a better term. But it doesn't tell you. Like, you can't
this episode's got
dressed up as Mickey.
This episode's got a theme. This episode's got a theme to it.
Yeah. The comedy thing wasn't really working for us people, so we went for a new target. And
ever since we talked to John Walsh, it's been
Yeah.
It's been all child predator talk since. No. All right. Berlo, anything to promote?
I guess I'll promote one of our old guests, the Cinema Snob. He was one of our most popular episodes. He does weekly reviews of old movies. He does midnight reviews of movies that come out and all. Very interesting and entertaining guy. You can check him out on YouTube, or you can go on his site, thecinemasnob.com.
All right, and I'm going to promote, we mentioned it before, but I'm going to promote it again. April 13th, myself, I'll be hosting, I'll be bringing some friends, Mike Ciccoli, who's been on the podcast, Natty Bumper Car, who's been on the podcast, and a couple other friends to, if you go back a few episodes, I don't know how many, but we are playing the Asbury Park Cat Convention. Yes, that's correct. We are doing cat-themed comedy. Now, it won't be all cat material. Every comic will have a cat bit, and we're doing it at the Wonder Bar in Asbury Park. So if you want to come watch me struggle and bomb and try to figure out ways to fit in with the cat community, it's probably a good show to come check out. And if you like cats, it all goes to a good cause. So that is the Asbury Park Cat Convention.
Yeah, for our people just tuning in, that is episode 229 called The Cat's Meow, where we talk to DJ Bornshine, Catsbury Park.
Yes. So I guess that's it, guys. Check us out, subscribe, and follow us on all social media stuff. You have Google, you can find us. And if you could, leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps the podcast get populated. And if you like what you heard, go back and check out some of our catalog, if you will, on some of the guests we've had on the show. I think you'll find something for everyone. So I guess that's it. Life is funny. Laugh at it.
In this case, creepy.
Yeah, life is creepy, and so are we. No. life is creepy. No, life is funny.
Still laugh at it.
Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Mike, don't get any ice cream this week.